This is The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Student loans are spiraling out of control. That's the headline. We've seen it all over the place. But is it true? Right now, Americans carry nearly $1.4 trillion in student loan debt. That number grows $2,726 every second. That's according to MarketWatch. These are big, scary numbers, but what does it actually mean? To borrow is one thing, and then to repay is something entirely different. And we want to break this down and see what's being talked about, how to change how we pay for college into the future. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. If you've got a question or a comment about student loans and what's happening with that, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet us at tprsource. We're joined by Sandy Baum. She's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Sandy, hi. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you, and I'm at the Urban Institute, not the Manhattan Institute.
I'm sorry. That's what it says in my paper. I'm sorry about that. And Beth Akers, a fellow at the Brookings Institute and author of the forthcoming book, Game of Loans, The Rhetoric and Reality of Student Debt. Beth, hi. Welcome to The Source.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
So let me ask you, Sandy, let's talk about accuracy. What is an accurate description of student loan situation?
Well, unfortunately, it's not as simple as many of the headlines would suggest. So the $1.3 trillion number that you cited tells us about how much debt lots of people out there who have been to college over many years and who have done undergraduate and graduate study have accrued. And what really matters is the circumstances of individual students. So we need to look at who's borrowing, how much they're borrowing, and what happens to them when they leave school. And really what we should be focused on is all the people who go to college, borrow money, and never graduate. They struggle the most.
So a lot of diversity in situations with the way people interact with student loans. Beth Akers, what's your take on the accurate description of the student loan situation?
You know, I agree with Sandy broadly on it, but I'll say one thing. You know, we talk about that number, the 1.3 and then the $1.4 trillion in outstanding debt, and I think it's right that we want to look at an individual level what's happening with the students. But I think kind of before you get there, something to think about is that, you know, all of the evidence we have historically suggests that the financial returns to investments in higher education are really large. And so another way of thinking about that $1.4 trillion is that we've had a lot of folks invest a lot of money in an activity that generates a lot of wealth for this country. And so maybe that's not such a bad thing. And I think that's what Sandy's narrative and mine as well have started to reconsider.
So, Sandy, are you concerned that there is a lot of rhetoric out there about the student loan crisis and that there's a student loan problem and that some people are beginning to sour on the idea of student loans, even though it does provide a pathway for many people to go to college, even though without it they never would?
Yes, I'm concerned that too many people will think that borrowing anything to go to college is a bad idea. And for many people, the opportunity to borrow from the federal government to finance their education has really opened a lot of doors. I'm also concerned that focusing on, say, the actually very few bachelor's degree recipients who are working at Starbucks and struggling is diverting attention from the population of people who really are having trouble with their student loans. Because this is, I mean, if you think about it, the description of it is sort of a middle-class description, like 18-year-olds going off to four-year colleges and not getting the best job in a few years. The real problems are with older students and with students who never get bachelor's degrees.
And so, Beth Akers, right now, as we have a campaign for running for president and we have candidates talking about free college tuition in the future, if they manage to do that somehow, what does that mean for student loans going into the future?
Well, I mean, if we did have free public colleges, obviously we'd have a lot more people going to public colleges and not private colleges because it becomes a lot more expensive, relatively speaking, to go to a private school at that point. And we also would almost necessarily see a decrease in the amount of debt that people are taking on. We'd still see some because of people who would choose to go into private institutions. But mechanically speaking, yeah, this would reduce debt. The question is there's a tremendous cost of engaging in a free college regime, and the question is whether or not that's worth it.
And Sandy, what do you think?
Well, I think that's right, but the other issue is that many students are borrowing not to pay their tuition, but to pay their living expenses. So actually, for low-income students attending public colleges, they're pretty much not paying tuition now because their federal and state grant aid covers the tuition, but they still borrow because it's really a challenge to pay for food and housing and all your other expenses while you're trying to also go to school.
Right. We're seeing that candidate, the Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, has a package of proposals for refinancing student loans, and she also wants to cut interest rates, a three-month moratorium executive order she promises when she, if she becomes president. Also, she's saying a three-year moratorium of student loans for entrepreneurs and startuppers with no interest rates. So this is her proposal. Does this make sense to you as some sort of way to relieve the student loan situation, Sandy Baum?
Well, I think that we have to look really carefully at how to find solutions that will be good for borrowers, good for taxpayers, and target their benefits on the borrowers who really need them. We do have an income-driven repayment system, so federal student loan borrowers already can go into a plan that says they don't have to make payments until their income is above 150% of the poverty line, and then they just spend an affordable fraction of their incomes. So we've actually already set up a lot of what people are looking for, which is making sure that people don't have payments that they can't afford. And I think that program really does need to be strengthened, and it needs to be well targeted. So I think there's a lot of sympathy for that direction, and people need to have that information so they stop thinking that we're actually asking people to make these huge payments that they can't afford.
And that is the Pay As You Earn program. And Beth Akers, what do you think about the proposed nominee for Democratic President Clinton's proposal here?
You know, I think I'll speak about the refinancing portion of her proposal. I think the efforts are somewhat misguided. And, you know, I'd like to just point out that if we were to engage in a large-scale refinancing of outstanding debt, which basically means everybody who has a student loan balance outstanding, they get a reduction of their interest rate, what that would do would basically create a transfer to the people who have the most debt in the economy, right? So the benefit of that sort of plan is proportional to the amount of debt that you have. So the highest debt borrowers get the greatest benefit, which sounds pretty good at first, except when you look at the data, you realize that the people with the largest student debt are actually in the best position financially. These are the people who've made very large investments in education and statistically speaking tend to have high earnings and don't seem to be having trouble paying back their loans. So like Sandy said, we want to aim to put any expenditure in this area into helping the people who really need it the most. And in my opinion, refinancing outstanding student debt does not achieve that.
Okay, we're going to take a one-minute break. We're going to continue our conversation talking about student loans, giving it a reality check. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We've seen the headlines, a student loan crisis. It's a $1 trillion-plus, you know, problem that's on the bubble, could cripple the economy. But what's the reality of the situation? We're going to reevaluate student loans. And we're seeing that it's a program that does have its problems, but it's also done a lot of good, helping many students go to college who otherwise could not afford it. We're speaking with Sandy Baum, a senior fellow at the Urban Institute, and Beth Akers, a fellow at the Brookings Institution and a author of the forthcoming book, Game of Loans, The Rhetoric and Reality of Student Debt. And Sandy, do you think the part of the problem is that students are getting bad advice?
Yes, I think students are getting bad advice. I mean, the reality is that when you see these stories of individual students who have, you know, borrowed $80,000 to get a bachelor's degree at a high-quality institution, and they have a bachelor's degree in a field where they're going to have trouble getting a job, you think, who suggested to them that it was reasonable to borrow $80,000? There are very few students who borrow that much. somehow they all get onto the front page of the paper. It's an uncommon event, but it should never happen. We should have a system that really gives students better advice about how to pay for college, about what to study and where to study, and we don't do a good job of that. I talk about this a lot in my book, which has recently come out, called Student Debt from Palgrave. So, and I suspect both books are going to make similar arguments.
And so, Beth, what do you think about the advice level that students are getting?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's certainly a lack of information on the front end when students are making these borrowing decisions. Some of my research also supports that. What we've done is looked at whether or not people even know how much they're borrowing. And what we find is that even just a few months after taking on their first loan, students don't know or can't tell you whether or not they've taken on a loan or how much that loan is for. And so there's certainly a huge problem of misinformation or lack of information on, in borrowing.
Okay, I just want to double back for a second. We mentioned Hillary Clinton's proposal for dealing with student debt and paying for college. Here's what Donald Trump, the Republican nominee, has said. He has spoken out on student loans, which he believes should not be structured so the government turns a profit off of them, as it currently does. He said, quote, "It's probably the only thing that the government should not be making money off of." That's what he told The Hill earlier this month. And so what do you think about that, Beth Akers, that the federal government does turn a hefty profit off of student loans?
Sure. So this seems like something that should not be debatable, whether or not the federal government is in fact making a profit or not on these loans. Unfortunately, it is. So federal government accounting rules are something of an art more than a science. And so there's a debate about whether or not that is an accurate characterization of the federal lending program. It's not my belief that the government is making its profits off these loans. And so I think that's, you know, it's a reasonable argument for one to lower the interest rates. But I think we'd want to really make the argument for lowering interest rates on a different merit rather than on that, since it's sort of a debatable issue.
And Sandy, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, first of all, it's not clear whether the government makes a profit. There are big technical debates about the accounting system of, you know, how you should figure out how much it actually costs the government to lend this money to students. Let me just say that Donald Trump's proposals are not exactly clear, but his campaign has said that they would like to get the federal government out of the student loan business altogether and return it to the banks. And I think that would be a really bad idea because we struggled for years to end the federal subsidies to the banks. I mean, for a long time, the banks are making a big profit at the expense of the taxpayers on this program. And really, the whole idea of student loans from the federal government is that students, by and large, don't have good credit ratings to start with, and the market doesn't do a good job of lending to them at reasonable rates because they're risky. I mean, if you're going to go to Harvard Law School, you can borrow. But for most students who really need the funds, they would have trouble in the private market. So the government is serving a very important purpose in this market.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or comment about student loans and what interests you in some of these proposals that are coming from our presidential candidates, give us a call, 210-614-8980. What are your experiences with student loans? And Gene asked us on Twitter how the pay what you can afford is calculated. And Beth, how is that calculated?
You know, I may give this one back to Sandy. I think she knows this better than I do.
Okay, so the question is how the profit is calculated?
Yeah, how what you can afford, you know,
how what you can afford is calculated. Yeah, you up to 150% of the poverty line, you don't have to make a payment. And that's the poverty line that depends on your family size. So if you are in a family of four, you have to have a higher income before you start making payments. And then, unfortunately, there are multiple programs, but then you pay either 10% or 15% of your income above that level. So the people with really low incomes don't pay. And the difference between 10% and 15%, it doesn't really matter. If you're making $15,000 a year, it doesn't matter. But if you're making $100,000 a year, then the difference between 10% and 15% is a lot of money. So, but again, you just don't have to make payments until you're above 150% of the poverty line, and then it's 10% of your income beyond that, not 10% of your whole income. So really, those payments, I mean, some people have unusual circumstances that mean that they actually can't afford it despite their higher incomes, but for most people, that's very reasonable. And actually, there is a concern that too many people will end up not repaying, and after 20 years, that we could have lots of doctors and lawyers whose debts are actually forgiven.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Kirsten is on the line. Kirsten, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to ask your commentators. It seems to me like we're hearing about the same thing from both of them. It doesn't seem like we're hearing two sides of a discussion. But I'd like to know whether either one of them actually has student debt.
Okay, Kirsten. Thanks for the call.
Because,
all right, you go ahead.
I'm sorry. Because I have 2 degrees. I have a good paying job. But there are things like my savings, my retirement, and my college education fund for my child, which don't get paid because I still struggle to pay my student loan payments.
Okay, Kirsten, thank you for the call. So either one of you, Sandy or Beth, you all have student loans?
I certainly did have student loans, and my kids had student loans. I have 4 kids who have been through college. They had student loans also. There are certainly individual students and too many individual students who really are in a situation where repaying their student loans is very difficult for them. So I don't think either Beth or I is suggesting that people don't face some real problems. But many of these people don't know about income-driven repayment. If they've taken private loans, this won't help them. But I think it's also really, we have a really unusual situation where somehow people who've been to college and have, even with reasonable earning power that's far above the typical earning power for most people in society, look, it's painful to pay back loans. There are other things you would rather do with your money. There's no question about it. And I certainly don't know the college circumstances, and they may be very difficult. But everybody would rather not make their loan payments. But the people making student loan payments are not in the same kind of circumstances as, say, the people who have medical debt because they couldn't afford, you know, their doctors and their hospitals, or the people with payday loans, or people who can't pay their parking tickets and then get their car towed and then lose their jobs because they can't pay them. There is lots of debt in this society that is causing a lot of people trouble, and many of those people don't have the same voice as student loan borrowers who are, by definition, college-educated and can speak out in a more effective way.
So we have to look at the societal benefit of providing this pathway to higher education. While it does benefit society overall, but it much more benefits the individual. And so if we're going to have federal programs which pay, make student loans or forgive student loans or make tuition free, how do we make sure that this is done to maximize the benefit for society and protects the taxpayer? Beth?
You know, I think this is really part of the challenge. And one of the concerns is, obviously, there is no real free college, right? I mean, someone's going to pay the bill. And the proposals that we've seen raise tax revenue in order to do that. One of the concerns with that is, just whether or not resources are going to the people who need it the most, and whether or not that's an efficient use of taxpayer dollars.
Sandy, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important. Society absolutely benefits. There's a real problem that we have backed away from that in the sense that states are providing smaller per-student subsidies, significantly smaller per-student subsidies than they did 10 or 20 years ago. And so tuition has risen much more rapidly than it should, given the social benefit. So I don't think that there's an argument about that, but certainly, I mean, I agree with that. I want society to step up and do its part, and taxpayers in general to do their part. But as you say, the benefit to individual students is huge. If you look at bachelor's degree recipients, their median earnings are, for young adults, are about $20,000 a year higher than the median earnings of people of the same age who just have a high school diploma. So if you think about that, let's just say cut the $20,000 in half. Say you had, because you have to pay taxes and so on, if you were going to pay $10,000 a year in loan payments, that would be very painful for you, but you'd still be better off than you would have been if you hadn't gone to high school, and better off than your peers who don't have a college education.
Okay, one last call with Jacob. Jacob, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. Appreciate that. I'm a recent graduate of St. Mary's University with a graduate degree. I have 3 degrees altogether. I have a very significant amount of debt. I'm married. I have 2 kids. I own a house, and it is very painful. I'm very blessed to have my degrees. They have helped me out beneficially far and beyond than I could have imagined. But even making my payments, it hurts. It puts very difficult to save for my daughter's education. It's difficult to put anything into retirement and much less savings. What I want to see or hear more about is just maybe a system in place where it's consolidated, it's not so convoluted, where students can navigate the system easier, understand what it is that they're getting into, how repayment works, how income-based repayment works, and just really understanding the system and stop making it so difficult and get away with Sallie Mae, who provides horrible customer service, and just make it easier to consolidate, make it easier to get a lower interest rate on your student debt. Those are some of the things that I would like to see, and just make it easier for first-time students graduating.
Okay, so let's get some. Let me ask you real quick. So, Jacob, you got 3 degrees. Or could you be a teacher? You know, there's teacher forgiveness programs.
Actually, I'm part of that because I work for the government, so I am on that. It does help me out a lot.
Right.
Through my own research. Nobody ever told me about that. I had to find out on my own.
Okay, so I'm going to let you go get an answer from Sandy. So, Sandy, your reaction, we've got about a minute.
The borrower makes a very good point. It should be simpler. There should be better information. But if he works for the government, after 10 years of making affordable payments, the rest of his debt will be forgiven. But he's absolutely right. The complexity and the lack of information are huge barriers, and we need to do something about that.
And, Beth, real quickly.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's a huge policy conversation, how we can make this simpler and easier for consumers so that they can make better choices on the front end and have less negative consequences on the back end.
Right. So people need to know that there are student loan forgiveness programs, public service loans, the Perkins loan cancellation, the teacher's loan forgiveness, all sorts of programs that are out there. It's just getting the right information into the right hands, and particularly before they make that loan and figure out if they're making a choice that is going to pay off dividends for them in the future. I want to thank both our guests, Sandy Baum, she's with the Urban Institute, and Beth Akers. And this is The Source on KSTX. We'll be back after this NPR news break. Stay tuned.